Welcome into Basketball U here on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2. Don't forget, you can take us on the go as well with the ESPN Chicago app. And as always, you can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. It's been a fun tournament. I know for Shea, it's maybe not been as fun as he would like. I've enjoyed every step along the way. It's pretty easy to appease me. I am a little kid with an iPad when it comes to this tournament, all right? You give me an iPad, I'll be entertained, all right? You can, like, a little kid, you can take them to Cleveland. As long as the hotel has a swimming pool, they're going to have a good time. That's how I am with this NCAA tournament.
And again, it's not like I'm not enjoying it. I'm having fun watching these games. I've been entertained by it. It's just, I don't think this is going to live up to the great tournaments we've seen in the past few years. I think we're going to look back on this one as kind of an outlier.
And I think the championship game that we are going to get right now, you've got UConn and San Diego State all matched up for this championship game tomorrow night. And when you look at kind of what this game could be, it could get ugly. Like, we've seen UConn dominate teams along the way. Margin of victories along the way, 24, 15, 23, 28, and yesterday was 13. Sure as hell didn't feel like 13 yesterday.
No, and that was where, like I mentioned, every time Miami got it to 10, it just felt like UConn put the stiff arm back out.
Yes.
That's as close as we're going to let you get. We're playing with our food a little bit. We know we've won this game. Boy,
we're letting coaches' kids get 5 second holding the ball calls and not on the inbounds. Like, that call never gets made. The no advance for 5 seconds, that call never gets made.
Ever.
Uh-huh.
And no, like, intentionally, right. You have Dan Hurley telling his kid, don't move the ball up the floor.
Right.
We are going to be good sports here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot. Screw me. I wonder if San Diego State can get slow UConn down at all. Like, they've played better defenses or as good of defenses as San Diego State. They haven't been slowed down. Like, I just don't know if this is going to be a close game. I hope it is. I want to be entertained with a close game tomorrow, but it feels like UConn does everything so well. You know, third in offensive efficiency, fourth in defensive efficiency. They crash the offensive glass. San Diego State can't be as poor on the offensive rebounding as they were in the first 30 minutes of yesterday's game.
No.
Or this will not be close.
So you look at the offensive rebounding percentages over the course of this tournament, and that is really what has been the difference for me. 35%, 34%, and then about 32 and 31.5% for a team that is not a big team by any stretch of the imagination. They're 241st in the country in average height, according to KenPom. And that, to me, this is where you're going to see a UConn team sort of give San Diego State a taste of their own medicine here, because UConn is going to out-rebound the hell out of this team.
Yeah.
And that, I think, like, what we've seen at the free throw line, all these missed free throws that turn into second chances for San Diego State, and then against Creighton, all the missed shots that turn into second chances, for a team with pack line principles where offensive rebounding is not something that is at a premium, that going up against this level of dominance on the boards. You've got UConn, the number two rebounding team on the offensive side of the ball, and number 67 on the defensive side of the ball, but part of that's because they're so damn efficient as well. Like, this team is so good rebounding the basketball that I think it's going to completely throw San Diego State for a loop.
And not only that, like, if what happens last night with UConn happens tomorrow night, where Adama Sanogo comes out and just out of nowhere hits three threes to start the game, good night.
Yep.
Like, that's where UConn has, they have the ability to kill you in so many different ways, whether it's the glass, whether it's at the three-point line. And I don't
and
know
can
if
be anybody.
Yeah, I don't know if San Diego State can weather the storm. That's where we've talked so much about this UConn team, because even though they're the four seed and they got the crooked number next to their name, they're one of the best teams in this tournament. And like, right now, they're rated number one in America by KenPom. They've had a 2-week stretch where they were number one by KenPom and they hit the top five in the AP poll. This is not a slouch UConn team that's a four seed. This is maybe a great team in college basketball.
Yes. And you look at the way that they've kind of gone about this entire tournament run and the dominance that they've had. Like, they've gone through some pretty good teams along the way. Like, you look at paths, and sure, like, playing Miami in the Final Four is not a path that we could have expected. And maybe we talk about paths and we're just like, oh, that's a quote-unquote easy way to get to the championship game. But when you look at the teams that they played along the way, like, they played Iona, kicked the hell out of them.
I know you hate St. Mary's, but
yeah, but like St. Mary's is a good team. Five seed. All right, they were top 15 according to KenPom. And then Arkansas, like Arkansas, I get they were an eight seed, right?
But it's an Eric Musselman led team that's no stranger to the moment. Mm-hmm. That had knocked out a one, that had experience being here, had been to the Elite Eight. That was a big
win. They had a ton of tournament success with the Must Bus. Then you've got Gonzaga, who's been one of the great powers of the last two decades in the sport. And then you beat Miami, and like that's here's my common theme here along the way. Look at the coaches they've beaten along the way. Look at the coaches that Dan Hurley has taken down. You've taken down the greatest coach to ever coach a 13 seed ever. Rick Pitino, Randy Bennett, Eric Musselman, Mark Few, Jim Larrañaga. So you want to talk about a path for UConn and maybe it not being as difficult to get to a championship game, but you look at the coaches that Dan Hurley has taken down along the way, that is an impressive resume right there.
Yeah, that's a really nice run for UConn, and that's, you're right, that's kind of been the most impressive thing about this tournament is how great UConn has been, and now you have to take on this San Diego State team that, honestly, and people are going to say they had an easy path. Yeah, going through Charleston and getting the luck draw with Furman, who probably shouldn't have beaten Virginia. Mm-hmm. You maybe should have had to go through Tony Bennett and Virginia there, and we would have seen a clash of pack line defenses. Mm-hmm. What an exciting game that would have been. Instead, you take out Furman, but then you got to go against Alabama.
Yeah.
And Brandon Miller. And I know,
make a comeback in that game as well.
And I know Brandon Miller shot the ball horrifically in this tournament, but that's still, it's Nate Oates, it's an Alabama team that was consistently
the best player in the tournament,
the best in the country, but the best player in the tournament. You go up against a Creighton team that came out of a Big East, I would say it's safe to say was a pretty good conference
this
season.
May have been the best in the sport.
Yeah.
When you look at it.
And then you take on this FAU dream team that, look, man, they finished 17th in KenPom.
They're going to finish with the most wins of any team in the sport.
Yeah. So it's not like they had an easy path either. Like, easier in the first two rounds, sure. But you had to win a huge one in the Sweet 16. You knocked out a beast in Creighton, needed to come back there, needed to come back against Alabama, needed to come back against Florida Atlantic. This is not a team that's going to be easy to put away.
And here's the funny thing with San Diego State. For a team that is so offensively inept, like this is a team that prior to yesterday was outside the top 70 in KenPom offensive efficiency. When they go down by 10, 15 points, it's more like going down by 14 to 20 points because of the pace they play, because of just the struggles that they have offensively. And that's part of what has made some of these comebacks so impressive to me for San Diego State is particularly yesterday. Like I tweeted it out yesterday, like, oh, they're down double digits, but for San Diego State, like that's like being down 20 points for them.
Yeah.
Because they are so, so poor on offense.
But it's so interesting the way that they flip the script in the game because it starts with defense. It starts with using that pack line to create some turnovers, give yourself some opportunities.
Transition
with numbers. Mm-hmm. And then it came on the offensive glass, which we've talked about, which is so interesting for a team that's so slow-paced, kind of bogs down offensively, to live on the glass and second chance points the way they're able to do that and kind of flip that switch on late in games. That's where UConn has to be able to dominate the offensive glass if they're going to win this game as easily as they have throughout this tournament. If they let San Diego State get any life at all on the offensive glass, that's where we start to see a competitive game.
Yes. 312-332-3776. Are you looking forward to tomorrow's national championship game? UConn and San Diego State, just as we all picked at the beginning of the year. And speak like, bragging pools are done.
Yeah, like, no kidding.
I won the office pool yesterday. The only reason that yesterday was the day that I found out my fate was because Dylan Hansen, one of our part-time teammates here that works with marketing and events, he had Miami as his champion. And so if Miami wins that game,
what a pool.
They end up winning the, he would end up winning the entire pool, but like most bracket pools that I'm in, they were paid out by the end of the Elite Eight.
My big one that I'm in with like 117 some people was decided, I think, after the Sweet 16. Like the Elite Eight didn't even matter, whatever happened. Because of the level of randomness that was in this tournament, bracket pools were all decided. Like we talked off air, unless you're in a UConn pool where you're probably living off of the tiebreaker because you have a bunch of UConn fans, your bracket pool's probably been settled for a couple weeks.
I talked to Dylan about this on Thursday. We were talking about it in the car when we did the opening day, right, for the Cubs. He said he just picked his bracket just by the logos.
Yeah.
So it was just completely random.
I saw him at Old Crow that day, and he texted me a couple times like, hey, are you going to hedge? And I was like, oh, I'm thinking about maybe trying to middle this a little bit, take a little bit of Miami plus 5.5. I ended up not. I ended up taking UConn yesterday and really doubling down.
And then you're sitting there going, maybe I should bet Miami now plus whatever. And you probably should have because they ended up making it a little closer.
It was like 15.5, but you had your 16-20, so I was like, all right, I'm not going to fade you right
there. And we've also been burned so many times going, why don't we bet the other side of UConn, this team's going to get, and then UConn just stomps.
Yeah.
I did it with Gonzaga. Gonzaga's second half, oh yeah, they'll get into it. They're the best second half team in the country.
Yeah, never happened.
Cut scene, Gonzaga's dead on the floor, and UConn ran away. I could have just won one bet. It would have been great.
That was the other thing, too. Like, when you look at what San Diego State's done, like, it's been comebacks. A lot of comebacks as of late.
And that's what UConn has stymied.
Right.
Like, Gonzaga, you would think, would have the second half comeback, and UConn said, you're just going to die.
Even Miami. Miami's had some great comebacks in this tournament, and what did UConn do? They kicked the doors down on them and said, no, you're not getting back within eight of us.
And then they played with their food a little bit, but like I said, every time that game got to 10, it was like UConn said, that's fun, get away. It was like Miami's a short person who can't reach UConn, so they just put the hand out, and they're running in place.
Yes. 312-332-3776. You want to talk some Final Four? You want to talk some national championship with us? It's all set for tomorrow down in Houston. Cannot wait for it. We'll be right back on Basketball U here on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
This is Basketball U.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago on FM 100.3 HD2, the ESPN Chicago app, and ESPN 1000.
Oh, thanks for that, Dick. Oh, what are we doing? Oh.
Thanks for that, Shay. Tyler Rocky, Shay Norling, it's been a lot of fun with you here on Basketball U. Thank you to Jake Cantu for producing today's show. Thank you to Charlie Bevins for stopping by as well. Always fun with
Always
Charlie.
Always good to see Chardon.
Let's never forget, Charlie Bevins started this tournament 21 for 21. Run. Made his first 21 picks correct. Shout out to Charlie Bevins.
As we say goodbye to Basketball U here on ESPN 1000, we also say goodbye to Chardon's 181 of 181, right?
Yeah, he was in the top 181 of the final perfect brackets.
What an insane run in a tournament like this.
Yes, good for Charlie. And to do it in this tournament, of all tournaments too, makes it that much more impressive as well.
So do you think this is the future of the NCAA tournament? Because I do. I think that, like, and as much as I am lamenting the lack of star power in a national title game, I do think as we go forward, the middle has been brought much closer to the top, and we're going to continue to see, because of the single elimination format, middle of the pack teams make their way to the Final Four.
Here's where I would kind of differ on that. Like, yes, it's good now, but part of what I think is going to actually lend itself to being not a more chalk, but you're going to see the return of the Blue Bloods, because you're going to start to see guys stay. Tyrese Proctor staying at Duke is huge. That is legitimate big-time news. That is a lottery-level NBA player coming back to college. And I don't know necessarily if it's because of the money, per se, that he's getting at Duke, because he'd be making more money in the NBA as a lottery pick, I'd imagine, right? Like, you're talking about
guaranteed money
as well. And you start your NBA career, and you start your NBA clock to hit free agency as well.
Maybe folks in Durham pay through the nose. I don't know.
Or not even that. Like, we've seen how much people and kids at Duke love that experience.
Yeah.
Like, Zion wanted to go back. If NIL were a thing, there may be a world where Zion Williamson spends another year in college. And I think we're going to get to that point where, I mean, Duke may run it back with a lot of the guys that they had last year. And with Hunter Dickinson hitting the transfer portal, like, what if Hunter ends up at Duke? Which, by the way, he would start as an all-time hated Duke player as well.
Oh, boy. He kind of fits the bill.
He does. But I'm almost rooting for it.
I was going to bring up, when you talked about players staying, there is the flip side of the coin, which is the transfer portal. And a guy like Hunter Dickinson, who could go pro, albeit probably not in the first round and probably not getting guaranteed money, but has an opportunity to go to the NBA and instead is transferring from Michigan, a program he's been at his career, and going someplace else and staying in college. That's also something new that we're seeing. If he goes to, I don't know, Tyler, Syracuse, we see the rise of Syracuse. If he goes to Georgetown, if he goes to St. John's,
Maryland,
one of these new darling programs, then you see the rise of, like, Ed Cooley, Georgetown's an attractive spot if you're Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah.
Rick Pitino, St. John's, an attractive spot if you're Hunter Dickinson. And I don't think either of those coaches are turning him down if he wanted to go to their program. So that's the flip side of the coin. Is we start to see the middle of the pack programs rise because all of a sudden you're attractive to some mid-major kid who wants a new experience, or to a guy like Hunter Dickinson who's been at Michigan for so long and feels burnt out and he wants to go someplace new.
Right. And I think part of it too is what we're going to see with the transfer portal and with NIL is we are going to see some of these teams have guys longer. Like, I think one of the perfect examples of this is Gonzaga. And you can say, oh, well, they're not in the Final Four. They didn't make it to the national championship game. Like, it's a failed season for Gonzaga. Gonzaga overachieved this year. Getting to the Elite Eight, I know it wasn't pretty the way they went out.
The conversation around this team all year was, this is not the Gonzaga you know.
It's that, oh boy, could this be the team that doesn't get to the Sweet 16? Not only did they get to the Sweet 16, they got to the Elite Eight, and they beat a UCLA, a really, really good, like, one of the best UCLA teams that we've seen in recent memory as well.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's where I kind of just feel like the future of this tournament and the future of this sport is going to be more in the middle of the pack. And it's the nature of the beast, Tyler. It's not that the middle of the pack teams are going to steal the recruits and they're going to have all the money and they're going to have all these. They're not going to have the super talented teams. But when you have a single elimination tournament and the fives are a lot closer to the ones than they used to be, you're going to start seeing the fives beat the ones a little bit more often.
But
we've already seen it the last 10 years. I think the next 10 years, with how much closer it's even gotten because of the portal and because of NIL money, it's just going to get more like this.
What happens, though, with the teams like Duke that start keeping guys like Proctor for 2-3 years? Because those teams, I think, are going to be really good. And that's where I see the ones start to kind of separate a little more from the fives.
Maybe the NIL contributes to this not happening, because I've mentioned before, when you look at the recruiting class next year, the top 10, only one of them is going pro. In this upcoming NBA draft, four of the top five players were either overtime elite or overseas. They didn't go to college.
Yes.
That's not going to be the case
next
year.
And I don't think that's an indictment on the college game, necessarily. I think it's more it's actually more of a compliment, I think, to the college game, because some of these guys just want to stay.
Yeah, no, that's the point I'm making is, when you look next year, it's Kentucky's got five guys who could go overseas, go pro, go to overtime elite if they wanted to. They're all going to Kentucky. Like, you're seeing those blue blood type programs, even UConn, recruit at an insanely high level, where maybe the NIL money and these bigger programs that have boosters that are willing to do these things that they're allowed to do now, you get the better players, you bring in the high-level freshmen, and all of a sudden we're right back where we were. There's 10 teams that can win, and we see the ones dominate their way through the tournament.
I think in the short term, NIL is going to help. I don't want to say the little guys, because that's not necessarily true, but the teams like Miami, where there's brand name to it, and even maybe to a degree, I won't say it's helped San Diego State, but the transfer portal more so there, but NIL is going to help these schools with names, with like a Miami, where there's a brand, there's an establishment there, whether it's like Iowa or something like that. Like, NIL is going to help those schools in the short term, but I think NIL is going to help the blue bloods in the long term.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think in the short term, too, like, if you're a school, I think it's true at Michigan State, I think it's clearly true at Miami, if you're a school that's got billionaire graduates who really care about sports and want to inflict their wealth and power on the sports programs and like the athletics at your school, you can compete with the big boys. That's the world we live in now.
Right. And we were talking about this yesterday too, like with these boosters who are offering up $1 million to some of these recruits.
It's happening at Syracuse.
Right. So Syracuse's biggest booster, who, by the way, just handed out $10,000 to a player on FAU before the Final Four, which okay. I thought was fascinating. But Syracuse's biggest booster, guy by the name of Adam Weitzman, has an on-the-table offer, $1 million to a five-star football and basketball player. And if you are a booster, and I get football rules the day, but if you had to pick between bringing in a five-star football player versus a five-star basketball player, unless it's a quarterback, which there's very few five-stars of those, unless it's a quarterback, you take the basketball player every day of the week because he impacts the game way more than what you're going to maybe find with a five-star corner or a five-star receiver.
Yeah.
He's going to impact the game way more as a five-star basketball player.
I would take a football player because I'm Mr. Football.
Yeah, you
as
are.
You so eloquently
I can see the
put.
Laces in the back of your head.
Yeah. But. Mr. Football over here would go football. But that's, I mean, it's just I'm wired a little differently. I get the point. If you've got a guy who just wants a national title in any sport, doesn't care, football, basketball, you obviously go basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get that. Like, you put Jabari Parker on Duke, they're good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can mm-hmm. put one guy on any team. The example last night was if you just move Kyle Filipkowski. I can never say that name. Oh, my God, I can't do it. Anyway.
Flip.
We know. Yeah, if you just move Kyle Flip to any team, if you just dropped him on Syracuse, you're a tournament team.
Yes, they would be.
If you just took Jalen Wilson off Kansas and dropped him onto some mid-major squad in the Valley, mm-hmm. you're a tournament team.
No doubt about it. All right, 312-332-3776. Craig is in Lansing before we get on out of here. What's up, Craig?
Hey, yeah, first, I agree with you on the basketball player because, I mean, that's 20% of the lineup. I mean, mm-hmm. he's going to weigh and affect the game. And the other guys... is only 9% of the lineup. So
right.
just you need more players surrounding him to make it work. But I think that this year's tournament is going to be, well, the one I remember for Caitlin Clark just being so great as she is. So I didn't get what that last caller, one of him, he was talking about. But anyways, also the year where now there's going to be a lot more pressure on coaches to win because they're going to say, well, see, they did it. Why aren't you using the transfer portal? Why aren't, you know, there's going to be higher expectations coming from administrators because of this tournament. And I think it's going to be difficult for guys to hang out of their jobs because there's going to be people short on patience that fire coaches that probably don't deserve to get fired because they're seeing these other programs succeed in ways that we haven't seen programs like these succeed in the past.
And Craig, I think that's a great point and thanks for the call. Like that's why Boeheim retired, Kay retired,
Jay Wright
retired, Jay Wright retired, Mike Bray, I don't know what the hell he's doing, but he's not coaching right now. It's why these guys have stepped down and stepped away from their jobs right now because they can't handle what's happening to the sport. They can't. And it's evolve or die. And,
yeah, it is.
And they're on the way out.
Isn't a little bit, and I've always thought this, and maybe we have 90 seconds left for this debate, but isn't it also like when Coach K left, to me it felt a little bit like, you used to be able to bend these rules, and it was exclusive to you, mm-hmm. but now everybody has access
right.
to them,
that's
and
why
you're whining about it.
That's why I think Rick Pitino's fascinating. So fascinating.
Because he always broke the rules,
mm-hmm.
Not if you ask him,
right.
but now he gets the opportunity to do it legally at St. John's, a story mm-hmm. program.
Yes.
This is going to be a fascinating watch.
Yep. I'm really intrigued. I think next year's going to be a lot of fun. Too. A lot of fun. The season always is. All right, so before we get on out of here, we've got UConn, we've got San Diego State. I think we're both in agreement that UConn is going to win, but what kind of margin of victory are you looking at over there? Are they getting a cover?
I got to tell you, there's something interesting here where the KenPom
line... 7.5-point
line
in this game.
The KenPom line is 5. So either
yeah.
you ride the lightning and go, the market's just way smarter than KenPom, and that's why it's out there at 7.5.
And
or you just take San Diego State because nobody's betting on them and hope that it's a close game.
On the flip side, though, like yesterday, KenPom had a 7-point margin, and it was a 5.5-point spread.
Yep, then I took UConn because I sided with KenPom, and yeah. everybody was on Miami. Now mm-hmm. we have the opposite. Everyone's on UConn. I may take San Diego State and play the
7.5 is a lot for a championship
it
game.
Sure is.
So, thanks so much for hanging out with us all tournament long. White Sox baseball, the pregame show with Jesse Rogers is coming up next.
This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome into Basketball U here on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2. Don't forget, you can take us on the go as well with the ESPN Chicago app. And as always, you can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. It's been a fun tournament. I know for Shea, it's maybe not been as fun as he would like. I've enjoyed every step along the way. It's pretty easy to appease me. I am a little kid with an iPad when it comes to this tournament, all right? You give me an iPad, I'll be entertained, all right? You can, like, a little kid, you can take them to Cleveland. As long as the hotel has a swimming pool, they're going to have a good time. That's how I am with this NCAA tournament.
And again, it's not like I'm not enjoying it. I'm having fun watching these games. I've been entertained by it. It's just, I don't think this is going to live up to the great tournaments we've seen in the past few years. I think we're going to look back on this one as kind of an outlier.
And I think the championship game that we are going to get right now, you've got UConn and San Diego State all matched up for this championship game tomorrow night. And when you look at kind of what this game could be, it could get ugly. Like, we've seen UConn dominate teams along the way. Margin of victories along the way, 24, 15, 23, 28, and yesterday was 13. Sure as hell didn't feel like 13 yesterday.
No, that was where I mentioned, every time Miami got it to 10, it just felt like UConn put the stiff arm back out.
Yes.
That's as close as we're going to let you get. We're playing with our food a little bit. We know we've won this game. Boy,
we're letting coaches' kids get 5 second holding the ball calls and not on the inbounds. Like, that call never gets made. The no advance for 5 seconds, that call never gets made.
Ever.
Uh-huh.
And no, like, intentionally, right. You have Dan Hurley telling his kid, don't move the ball up the floor.
Right.
We are going to be good sports here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot. Screw me. I wonder if San Diego State can get slow UConn down at all. Like, they've played better defenses than, or as good of defenses as San Diego State. They haven't been slowed down. I just don't know if this is going to be a close game. I hope it is. I want to be entertained with a close game tomorrow, but it feels like UConn does everything so well. You know, third in offensive efficiency, fourth in defensive efficiency. They crash the offensive glass. San Diego State can't be as poor on the offensive rebounding as they were in the first 30 minutes of yesterday's game.
No.
Or this will not be close.
So you look at the offensive rebounding percentages over the course of this tournament, and that is really what has been the difference for me. 35%, 34%, and then about 32 and 31.5% for a team that is not a big team by any stretch of the imagination. They're 241st in the country in average height, according to KenPom. And that, to me, this is where you're going to see a UConn team sort of give San Diego State a taste of their own medicine here, because UConn is going to out-rebound the hell out of this team.
Yeah.
And that, I think, like, what we've seen at the free throw line, all these missed free throws that turn into second chances for San Diego State, and then against Creighton, all the missed shots that turn into second chances, for a team with pack line principles where offensive rebounding is not something that is at a premium, that going up against this level of dominance on the boards, you've got UConn, the number two rebounding team on the offensive side of the ball, and number 67 on the defensive side of the ball, but part of that's because they're so damn efficient as well. Like, this team is so good rebounding the basketball that I think it's going to completely throw San Diego State for a loop.
And not only that, like, if what happens last night with UConn happens tomorrow night, where Adamus Anogo comes out and just out of nowhere hits three threes to start the game, good night.
Yep.
Like, that's where UConn has, they have the ability to kill you in so many different ways, whether it's the glass, whether it's at the three-point line. I don't know if San Diego State can weather the storm. That's where we've talked so much about this UConn team, because even though they're the four seed and they got the crooked number next to their name, they're one of the best teams in this tournament. And like right now, they're rated number one in America by KenPom. They've had a two-week stretch where they were number one by KenPom, and they hit the top five in the AP poll. This is not a slouch UConn mm-hmm. team that's a four seed. This is maybe a great team in college basketball.
Yes, and you look at the way that they've kind of gone about this entire tournament run and the dominance that they've had, like, they've gone through some pretty good teams along the way. Like, you look at paths, and sure, like, playing Miami in the Final Four
yeah.
is not a path that we could have expected, and maybe we talk about paths and we're just like, oh, that's a quote-unquote easy way to get to the championship game. But when you look at the teams that they played along the way, like, they played Iona. Kicked the hell out of them.
I know you hate St. Mary's, but
yeah, but like St. Mary's is a good team. Five seed. All right, they were top 15 according to KenPom, and then Arkansas. Like Arkansas, I get they were an eight seed, right?
But it's an Eric Musselman led team yes. that's no stranger to the moment. Mm-hmm. That had knocked out a one. That had experience being here. Had been to the mm-hmm. Elite Eight. That was a big
win. They've had a ton of tournament success with the Must Bus. Then you've got Gonzaga, who's been one of the great powers of the last two decades in the sport. And then you beat Miami, and like that's here's my common theme here along the way. Look at the coaches they've beaten. Along the way, look at the coaches that Dan Hurley has taken down. You've taken down the greatest coach to ever coach a 13 seed ever. Rick Pitino, Randy Bennett, Eric Musselman, Mark Few, Jim Larrañaga. So you want to talk about a path for UConn and maybe it not being as difficult to get to a championship game, but you look at the coaches that Dan Hurley has taken down along the way. That is an impressive resume right there.
Yeah, that's a really nice run for UConn, and you're right. That's kind of been the most impressive thing about this tournament is how great UConn has been. And now you have to take on this San Diego State team that, honestly, people are going to say they had an easy path. Yeah, going through Charleston and getting the luck draw with Furman, who mm-hmm. probably shouldn't have beaten Virginia. Mm-hmm. You maybe should have had to go through Tony Bennett and Virginia there, and we would have seen a clash of pack line defenses. Mm-hmm. What an exciting game that would have been. Instead, you take out Furman, but then you got to go against Alabama
yeah.
and Brandon Miller. And I know,
and make a comeback in that game as well.
And I know Brandon Miller shot the ball horrifically in this tournament, but that's still, it's Nate Oates, it's an Alabama team that was consistently
the best player in the tournament,
the best in the country, but the best player in the tournament. You go up against a Creighton team that came out of a Big East, I would say it's safe to say was a pretty good conference
this
season. May have
been the best in the sport.
Yeah.
When you look at it.
And then you take on this FAU dream team that, look, man, they finished 17th in KenPom.
They're going to finish with the most wins of any team in the sport.
Yeah. So it's not like they had an easy path either. Like, easier in the first two rounds, sure. But you had to win a huge one in the Sweet 16. You knocked out a beast in Creighton, needed to come back there, needed to come back against Alabama, needed to come back against Florida Atlantic. This is not a team that's going to be easy to put away.
And here's the funny thing with San Diego State. For a team that is so offensively inept, like, this is a team that prior to yesterday was outside the top 70 in KenPom offensive efficiency. When they go down by 10, 15 points, it's more like going down by 14 to 20 points because of the pace they play, because of just the struggles that they have offensively. And that's part of what has made some of these comebacks so impressive to me for San Diego State is particularly yesterday. Like I tweeted it out yesterday, like, oh, they're down double digits, but for San Diego State, like that's like being down 20 points for them.
Yeah.
Because they are so, so poor on offense.
But it's so interesting the way that they flip the script in the game because it starts with defense. It starts with using that pack line to create some turnovers, mm-hmm. give yourself some opportunities.
Transition
with numbers. Mm-hmm. And then it came on the offensive glass, which we've talked about, which is so interesting for a team that's so slow-paced, kind of bogs down offensively, to live on the glass and second chance points the way they're able to do that and kind of flip that switch on late in games. That's where UConn has to be able to dominate the offensive glass if they're going to win this game as easily as they have throughout this tournament. If they let San Diego State get any life at all on the offensive glass, that's where we start to see a competitive game.
Yes. 312-332-3776. Are you looking forward to tomorrow's national championship game? UConn and San Diego State, just as we all picked at the beginning of the year. And speak like, Bradley Pools are done.
Yeah, like, no kidding.
I won the office pool yesterday. The only reason that yesterday was the day that I found out my fate was because Dylan Hansen, one of our part-time teammates here that works with marketing and events, he had Miami as his champion. And so if Miami wins that game,
what a pool.
They end up winning the he would end up winning the entire pool, but like most bracket pools that I'm in, they were paid out by the end of the Elite Eight.
My big one that I'm in with like 117 some people was decided, I think, after the Sweet 16. Like the Elite Eight didn't even matter, whatever happened. Because of the level of randomness that was in this tournament, bracket pools were all decided. Like we talked off air, unless you're in a UConn pool where you're probably yes. living off of the tiebreaker because you have a bunch of UConn fans, your bracket pool's probably been settled for a couple weeks.
I talked to Dylan about this on Thursday. We were talking about mm-hmm. it in the car when we did the opening day, right, for the Cubs.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He said he just picked his bracket just by the logos.
Yeah.
So it was just completely random.
I saw
random.
Him at Old Crow that yeah. day, and he texted me a couple times like, hey, are you going to hedge? And I was like, oh, I'm thinking about maybe trying to middle this a little bit, take a little bit of Miami plus 5.5. I ended up not. I ended up taking UConn yesterday.
And
really
I told
doubling
you,
down.
And then you're sitting there going, maybe I should bet Miami now plus whatever. And you probably should have because they ended up making it a little closer.
It was like 15.5, but you had your 16-20. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to fade you right there.
And we've also been burned so many times going, why don't we bet the other side of UConn? This team's going to get, and then UConn just stomps.
Yeah.
I did it with Gonzaga. Gonzaga's second half. Oh yeah, they'll get into it. They're the best second half team in the country.
Yeah. Never happened.
Cut scene. Gonzaga's dead on the floor and UConn ran away. I could have just won one bet. It would have been great.
That was the other thing too. Like when you look at what San Diego State's done, like it's been comebacks. A lot of comebacks as of late.
And that's what UConn has stymied.
Right.
Like, Gonzaga, you would think, would have the second half comeback, and UConn said, you're just gonna
die. Even Miami. Miami's had some great comebacks in this tournament, and what did UConn do? They kicked the doors down on them and said, no, you're not getting back within eight. Of us.
And then they played with their food a little bit, but like I said, every time that game got to 10, it was like UConn said, that's fun, get away. It was like the Miami's a short person who can't reach UConn, so they just put the hand out mm-hmm. and they're running in place.
Yes. 312-332-3776. You want to talk some Final Four? You want to talk some national championship with us? It's all set for tomorrow down in Houston. Cannot wait for it. We'll be right back on Basketball U here on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
This is Basketball U.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago, on FM 100.3 HD2, the ESPN Chicago app, and ESPN 1000.
Oh, thanks for that, Dick. Oh, what are we doing? Oh.
Thanks for that, Shay. Tyler Rocky, Shay Norling, it's been a lot of fun with you here on Basketball U. Thank you to Jake Cantu for producing today's show. Thank you to Charlie Bevins for stopping by as well. Always fun with
Always
Charlie.
Always good to see Chardog.
Let's never forget, Charlie Bevins started this tournament 21-21. Made his first 21 picks correct. Shout out to Charlie Bevins.
As we say goodbye to Basketball U here yes. on ESPN 1000, we also say goodbye to Chardog's 181 of 181, right?
Yeah, he was in the top 181 of the final perfect brackets.
What an insane run in yes. a tournament like this.
Yes, good for Charlie. And to do it in this tournament of all tournaments, too, makes it that much more impressive as well.
So do you think this is the future of the NCAA tournament? Because I do. I think that, like, and as much as I am lamenting the lack of star power in a national title game, I do think as we go forward, the middle has been brought much closer to the top, and we're going to continue to see, because of the single elimination format, middle of the pack teams make their way to the Final Four.
Here's where I would kind of differ on that. Like, yes, it's good now, but part of what I think is going to actually lend itself to being not a more chalk, but you're going to see the return of the Blue Bloods, because you're going to start to see guys stay. Tyrese Proctor staying at Duke yeah. is huge. That is legitimate big-time news. That is a lottery-level NBA player coming back to college. And I don't know necessarily if it's because of the money, per se, that he's getting at Duke, because he'd be making more money in the NBA as a lottery pick. I'd imagine, right? Like, you're talking about
a guaranteed money,
it's guaranteed
as a lottery
money
pick.
As well. And you start your NBA career and you start your NBA clock to hit free agency faster as well.
Maybe folks in Durham pay through the nose. I don't know.
Or not even that. Like, we've seen how much people and kids at Duke love that experience.
Yeah.
Like, Zion wanted to go back. If NIL were a thing, there may be a world where Zion Williamson spends another year in college. And I think we're going to get to that point where, I mean, Duke may run it back with a lot of the guys that they had last year. And with Hunter Dickinson hitting the transfer portal, like, what if Hunter ends up at Duke? Which, by the way, he would start as an all-time hated Duke player as well.
Oh, boy. He kind of fits the bill.
He does. But I'm almost rooting for it.
I was going to bring up, when you talked about players staying, there is the flip side of the coin, which is the transfer portal. And a guy like Hunter Dickinson, who could go pro, albeit probably not in the first round and probably not getting guaranteed money, but has an opportunity to go to the NBA and instead is transferring from Michigan, a program he's been at his career, and going someplace else and staying in college. That's also something new that we're seeing. If he goes to, I don't know, Tyler, Syracuse, we see the rise of Syracuse. If he goes to Georgetown, if he goes to St. John's,
Maryland,
one of these new darling programs, then you see the rise of, like, Ed Cooley, Georgetown's an attractive spot if you're Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah.
Rick Pitino, St. John's, an attractive spot if you're Hunter Dickinson. And I don't think either of those coaches are turning him down if he wanted to go to their program. So that's the flip side of the coin. Is we start to see the middle of the pack programs rise because all of a sudden you're attractive to some mid-major kid who wants a new experience, or to a guy like Hunter Dickinson who's been at Michigan for so long and feels burnt out and he wants to go someplace new.
Right. And I think part of it too is what we're going to see with the transfer portal and with NIL is we are going to see some of these teams have guys longer. Like, I think one of the perfect examples of this is Gonzaga. And you can say, oh, well, they're not in the Final Four. They didn't make it to the national championship game. Like, it's a failed season for Gonzaga. Gonzaga overachieved this year. Getting to the Elite Eight, I know it wasn't pretty the way they went out.
The conversation around this team all year was, this is not the Gonzaga
right.
You know.
It's that, oh boy, could this be the team that doesn't get to the Sweet 16? Not only did they get to the Sweet 16, they got to the Elite Eight, and they beat a UCLA, a really, really good, like, one of the best UCLA teams that we've seen in recent memory as well.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's where I kind of just feel like the future of this tournament and the future of this sport is going to be more in the middle of the pack. And it's the nature of the beast, Tyler. It's not that the middle of the pack teams are going to steal the recruits and they're going to have all the money and they're going to have all these. They're not going to have the super talented teams. But when you have a single elimination tournament and the fives are a lot closer to the ones than they used to be, you're going to start seeing the fives beat the ones a little bit more often.
But
we've already seen it the last 10 years. I think the next 10 years, with how much closer it's even gotten because of the portal and because of NIL money, it's just going to get more like this.
What happens though with the teams like Duke that start keeping guys like Proctor for 2-3 years? Because those teams, I think, are going to be really good. And
that's where
I see the ones start to kind of separate a little more from the fives.
Maybe the NIL contributes to this not happening, because I've mentioned before, when you look at the recruiting class next year, the top 10, only one of them is going pro. In this upcoming NBA draft, 4 of the top 5 players were either overtime elite or overseas. They didn't go to college.
Yes.
That's not going to be the case
and
next year.
And I don't think that's an indictment on the college game necessarily. I think it's more of a, it's actually more of a compliment, I think, to the college game, because some of these guys just want to stay.
Yeah, no, that's the point I'm making is, when you look next year, it's Kentucky's got 5 guys who could go overseas, go pro, go to overtime elite if they wanted to. They're all going to Kentucky. Like, you're seeing those blue blood type programs, even UConn, recruit at an insanely high level, where maybe the NIL money and these bigger programs that have boosters that are willing to do these things that they're allowed to do now, you get the better players, you bring in the high-level freshmen, and all of a sudden we're right back where we were. There's 10 teams that can win, and we see the ones dominate their way through the tournament.
I think in the short term, NIL is going to help. I don't want to say the little guys, because that's not necessarily true, but the teams like Miami, where there's brand name to it, and even maybe to a degree, I won't say it's helped San Diego State, but the transfer portal more so there. But NIL is going to help these schools with names, with like a Miami, where there's a brand, there's an establishment there, whether it's like Iowa or something like that. Like, NIL is going to help those schools in the short term, but I think NIL is going to help the Blue Bloods in the long term.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think in the short term, too, like if you're a school, I think it's true at Michigan State. I think it's clearly true at Miami. If you're a school that's got billionaire graduates who really mm-hmm. care about sports and want to inflict their wealth and power on the sports programs and like the athletics at your school, you can compete with the big boys. That's the world we live in now.
Right. And we were talking about this yesterday too, like with these boosters who are offering up $1 million to some of these recruits.
It's happening at Syracuse.
Right. So Syracuse's biggest booster, who by the way just handed out $10,000 to a player on FAU before the Final Four, which okay. I thought was fascinating. But Syracuse's biggest booster, guy by the name of Adam Weitzman, has an on the table offer $1 million to a 5-star football and basketball player. And if you are a booster, and I get football rules the day, but if you had to pick between bringing in a 5-star football player versus a 5-star basketball player, unless it's a quarterback, which there's very few 5-stars of those, unless it's a quarterback, you take the basketball player every day of the week. Because he impacts the game way more than what you're going to maybe find with a 5-star corner or a 5-star receiver.
Yeah.
He's going to impact the game way more as a 5-star basketball player.
I would take a football player because I'm Mr. Football.
Yeah, you
as
are.
As you so eloquently
I can see the
put.
Laces in the back of your head.
Yeah. Mr. Football over here would go football. But that's, I mean, it's just I'm wired a little differently. I get the point. If you've got a guy who just wants a national title in any sport, doesn't care, football, basketball, you obviously go basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get that. Like, you put Jabari Parker on Duke, they're good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can mm-hmm. put one guy on any team. The example last night was if you just move Kyle Flipkowski. I can never say that name.
Filip, yeah.
Oh, my God, I can't do it. Anyway.
Flip.
We know. Yeah, if you just move Kyle Flip to any team, if you just dropped him on Syracuse, you're a tournament team.
Yes, they would be.
If mm-hmm. you just took Jalen Wilson off Kansas and dropped him onto some mid-major squad in the Valley, mm-hmm. you're a tournament team.
No doubt about it. All right, 312-332-3776. Craig is in Lansing before we get on out of here. What's up, Craig?
Hey, yeah, first, I agree with you on the basketball player because, I mean, that's 20% of the lineup. I mean, mm-hmm. he's going to weigh and affect the game. And the other guys is only 9% of the lineup. So
right.
just you need more players surrounding him to make it work. But I think that this year's tournament is going to be, well, the one I remember for Caitlin Clark just being so great as she is. So I didn't get what that last caller, one of him, he was talking about. But anyways, also the year where now there's going to be a lot more pressure on coaches to win because they're going to say, well, see, they did it. Why aren't you using the transfer portal? Why aren't, you know, there's going to be higher expectations coming from administrators because of this tournament. And I think it's going to be difficult for guys to hang out of their jobs because there's going to be people short on patience that fire coaches that probably don't deserve to get fired because they're seeing these other programs succeed in ways that we haven't seen programs like these succeed in the past.
And Craig, I think that's a great point and thanks for the call. Like that's why Boeheim retired, Kay retired,
Roy
retired, Jay Wright retired, Mike Bray, I don't know what the hell he's doing, but he's not coaching right now. It's why these guys have stepped down and stepped away from their jobs right now because they can't handle what's happening to the sport. They can't. And it's evolve or die. And
and
they're on the way out.
Isn't a little bit, and I've always thought this, and maybe we have 90 seconds left for this debate, but isn't it also like when Coach K left, to me it felt a little bit like, you used to be able to bend these rules, and it was exclusive to you, mm-hmm. but now everybody has access
right.
to them,
that's
and
why
you're whining about it.
That's why I think Rick Pitino's fascinating. So fascinating.
Because he always broke the rules,
mm-hmm.
Not if you ask him,
right.
but now he gets the opportunity to do it legally at St. John's, a storied mm-hmm. program.
Yes.
This is going to be a fascinating watch.
Yep. I'm really intrigued. I think next year's going to be a lot of fun. Too. A lot of fun. The season always is. All right, so before we get on out of here, we've got UConn, we've got San Diego State. I think we're both in agreement that UConn is going to win, but what kind of margin of victory are you looking at over there? Are they getting a cover?
I gotta tell you, there's something interesting here where the KenPom line,
7.5-point line
in
this game.
The KenPom line is 5. So either you ride the Lightning and go, the market's just way smarter than KenPom, and that's why it's out there at 7.5.
And,
or you just take San Diego State because nobody's betting on them and hope that it's a close game.
On the flip side, though, like yesterday, KenPom had a 7-point margin, and it was a 5.5-point spread.
Yep, then I took UConn because I sided with KenPom, and everybody was on Miami. Now we have the opposite. Everyone's on UConn. I may take San Diego State and play the
7.5 is a lot for a championship game.
Sure is.
So, thanks so much for hanging out with us all tournament long. White Sox baseball, the pregame show with Jesse Rogers is coming up next.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.